You're listening to the Marketplace Flash Briefing. I'm Amy Scott. It's Friday, and we're taking a look back at the week. Today's message that the Fed has more work to do to bring down inflation comes from the Commerce Department and its Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, which shows that inflation rose 0.6% in January, more than expected. For the year, prices were up 4.7%. And that's where we'll start our weekly wrap with Catherine Rempel at The Washington Post and Sudeep Reddy at Politico. Welcome back to both of you.
Hi, Amy.
Hey.
So, Sudeep, for about a month there, we were talking about disinflation, that is, slower inflation. What happened?
You know, I saw the numbers this morning. I thought this is a hot mess. But then I, upon reflection, would maybe call it a warm mess, but it's still a mess regardless. It's just, it always seemed foolish to think that this inflation problem was going to go away with a straight line down. It's obviously not going to. We've moved, as we've discussed many times, from the goods inflation, the whole problem with supply chains and ships and everything, to services inflation, which gets more embedded in the economy. And we've seen this, a train of Fed speakers in the last week come out and say this is going to be a battle that goes on for some time. They say they're not going to let up, which is why the stock market adjusted as in response to it. But they really can't let up. This is like not a battle you want to screw around with. And so they know that. And they need to beat the inflation dragon before it starts devouring more of the economy.
We've got a warm mess, an inflation dragon, lots of good metaphors to get us going. So, Catherine, we knew the Fed wasn't going to let up. They've been indicating as much. But, you know, given the news today, they're meeting in less than a month from now. How does that change the calculation?
Well, I mean, it is puzzling that after whatever it is, 8 consecutive rate hikes, we're not seeing more disinflation, more air coming out of the tires, the dragon slain, or whatever metaphor you want to use. You know, I think the best possible scenario, the most optimistic way to read these numbers is maybe they're distorted by some weird seasonality and like you shouldn't take them at face value. I mean, it's 1 month of data. You never want to read too much into 1 month of data.
Right.
And there were some weird things. You know, January was an unusually warm month. And so that's what I mean by the seasonal adjustments could have been kind of wacky. But it's that, you know, the best possible scenario being that the numbers are wrong is really not a great place to be. And I can imagine that the Fed is probably not super happy with the trends that we've seen so far, and there will be more pressure on Fed officials to act a little bit more aggressively in the months ahead.
Sudeep, what else is the Fed weighing? I mean, we've seen this inflation number. Obviously, the job market has remained strong, but we did learn this week that GDP grew more slowly in the fourth quarter. Are there any other signs that Fed policy longer term is actually working to cool off the economy?
Yeah, the weird problem for the Fed right now is that the economy is actually pretty strong. For all the times in the last 15 years we've talked about trouble in the economy's in a good place. It's fairly decent economic growth. There are all sorts of potential distortions in that. Obviously, this ridiculously strong job growth that we saw last month, I'm sure it will moderate before long, but the job market is holding up. So for the economy overall, for all of the beating that the economy's taken from the Fed, for it to be holding up this well is like, it's remarkable. I think it's surprising to all of us, as Catherine said. It's just surprising. And so for the Fed, that just means they have to keep pushing and make sure that it does not turn into a disaster that they have to clean up later. But like, it does leave like the soft landing question, but it also just opens the door to the possibility that this will be a very long road of dealing with the inflation problem.
So one place where we have seen higher interest rates doing their job, essentially cooling demand, has been in housing. And Catherine, I wanted to talk to you about that because we had news this week that sales of existing homes fell for the 12th month in a row. It's been a full year now, but new home sales have actually been picking up the past few months. And there is talk that maybe we're at or near the bottom. What do you think there?
I mean, the housing market is is arguably the most interest rate sensitive part of the economy, at least that, you know, that the Fed is trying to influence right now. And it does, interest rates do seem to be doing their job in the sense of bringing down home prices, bringing down the quantity of sales. To your question about what's going on with new home sales going up versus existing home sales going down, I wonder if that's partly just about the supply rather than demand for new homes. You know, the supply was really constrained for a long time. It was difficult to build. It was difficult to get garage doors and labor and everything else that goes into building a home. So maybe, you know, given how long it took to build stuff, there's things actually finally coming on the market that are selling, you know, that it's really just about the people who were there to buy last year are finally able to buy. It could be that, you know, builders might respond more quickly to shocks like changes in interest rates. You know, they're borrowing short term. They're paying attention to the cost of capital. Maybe if you are selling an existing home, you haven't really adjusted your expectations for what sales price is reasonable. So there's weird stuff going on. But I think the general trend in the housing market is that as it gets more expensive to borrow, that's going to weigh on prices. And we will probably, you know, I think we will probably see house prices come down more. I don't think we've bottomed yet, to answer your question.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that means affordability improves for some people who've been cut out of the market. Before I let you two go, on everyone's mind today, of course, it's been 1 year since Russia invaded Ukraine. And, you know, the human toll is absolutely devastating. Some estimates say more than 300,000 people have been killed or wounded. Millions more have been displaced. And Sudeep, I wonder if you can talk about the sort of global economic impact of this war. Yesterday, we had a piece on about food insecurity. This has affected food prices and energy prices, not just in Europe, but around the world.
There are absolutely so many knock-on effects. We dealt with the chaos of the pandemic and what that did to global trade, and now we're obviously this is very different with Russia, and its sanctions have been very targeted. The global, particularly U.S. and EU sanctions, have been targeted. What we're seeing here, though, is the classic story of food and energy prices and a region that is important. It is remarkable a year later that we have not seen absolute devastation in energy markets. That is, I think, for the people who have been enacting sanctions, the success story here is that they did not wreck the global economy as a result of it. But this war is not over. They have not won. It's ongoing, and there are still all sorts of things hanging over us in the region. And you hear about China and Iran and all the other players getting involved, and that's just going to hang over sentiment for a while because it's a risk factor that's kind of lurking in the background that we'll all have to watch.
Yeah. Well, we'll end there on a sad note, but an appropriate one, I think. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. Catherine Rampell is at The Washington Post. Thank you both so much, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, Amy.
Great weekend.
That's all for today's Flash Briefing. For more news, visit marketplace.org.